would you please introduce yourself? This is a good way to start these things, just, you know, just for kicks. And you are?
I'm Brett, and I sing and play guitar for the band.
Wow. Amazing.
And I'm Josh Fiedler, and I play guitar.
Yes, and I know the whole thing about the, like, suddenly there's a third guitar in the band, but we'll get there. See, I try to do a little research. Okay, so now we'll, this is the formal interview, so I might repeat myself. So I want to start right in with This Is a Love Song for the Loveless. I have to say this is the loudest melodic rock and roll I've ever played, because it really, it's funny because it starts out one way, and the next thing you know, it is full throttle. The meter is pinned, and so tell me about how it represents the band right now, because, and I'm going to get to some other quotes from some websites and stuff, but the band has, like, the band has evolved, you know? Or maybe not. Maybe you're just going backwards.
And you never know. That's the thing. We like to think we're going forward, but we're in our own little shell.
We're little hamsters, aren't we?
Yeah, we don't really know. No, I think the song definitely represents, you know, what we're about at this point. It's an upbeat song. It's more aggressive, but, you know, like you said, it's definitely based on melody, and it's definitely based on, you know, hooks, phrases, guitar hooks, and vocal hooks.
Hooks. Oh my God, you're admitting to hooks. I live for hooks.
We have to admit to hooks. That's what it's all about. Hooks.
It's about hooks. Would you like to comment on that? I'm going to give him like something like there's no answer. Never mind. Yeah. I won't do that.
Well.
I like the hooks. Okay. So, I read about the recording process of the new album on the site. My listeners probably have not, but the album truly does sound live, and I know that was kind of, you know, the intent was to, you know, and everybody tries this, except that I think the issue is that then everybody gets caught in making a really slick album, and then people do see them live, and it's a completely different band, and that sometimes that's okay, and sometimes that's not, but, you know, what I read is that you really did play this mostly together in one room, and we'll get to the process that happened after that. So did you really play a lot of it live versus tracking it, you know, initially?
Absolutely. It's not completely live, but it is way more live than anything we've done in the past, and there are quite a few songs that are, I'd say, probably, well, there's a few songs that are 100% live musically, and, you know, a lot of it falls into that category.
But then you did the vocals a whole very unique way. Didn't you do them completely separately from every, like, completely separate environment?
Except, well, there's two songs where the vocals are tracked with the band live. The main issue with that was I was going to sing with the band, and that was the plan. But we ended up, the studio that we ended up working in did not have anywhere that I could go isolated that wouldn't pick up everything. And if it would have been a bigger room, a bigger tracking room, I think I could have done it. But there would have just been so much bleed that there was no way that we could really do it. So I had to record the vocals on my own. So I actually did it.
You would have been screaming over everybody else, which would have led to a very, you sounded like Little Richard or something.
Probably.
It's a love song!
Yeah, probably. Exactly.
That would have been a whole different approach, though.
Yeah, it would have, and I probably would have still been hoarse today.
But in the end, you brought in the big-time people to make it sound a certain way. Now, I ask this question every time, because I know there was John and Joe, John Travis and Joe Barisi and all of that. Now, I won't go through all the people I've asked this and why, but the role of the producer, because you're also given production credit on the album. So when you bring in big-time producers... Yeah, I saw the look on your face. This is great because, you know, as someone who produces a lot of things for a living, you bring in big-time producers, and I know what the role of the producer is. So tell me about the role of the producer here and tell the truth, if you possibly can, about whether this was a good role, a bad role, and in the end, whether you got what you wanted out of this record.
I think anytime that you attempt to add a person into a... You know, we're a group of creative people who pretty much know what buttons that we can push with one another and what buttons we can't push. We've all grown up together and we've known each other for a long time. Anytime you add another person into that, in our case, a sixth person, it's a bit risky because you don't know if you're going to gel with the person or not. And when we sent music out to find a producer for the record, we basically just sent music out to producer managers and said, you know, anybody who's interested in the music, we'll talk to them. We don't care what records they've made. We don't care. We just want to talk to people. So I had 19 one-hour-long conversations with 19 different people.
Oh my God.
trying to figure out who was the right person. And ultimately, I don't know if we chose the right person. I don't know if we didn't choose the right person. I think that John was really good at some things, but we also, I wouldn't say that he, well, I think he was really good at coaxing good performances out of us, getting us to play really energetically, and I think that was one of his strong points. But, you know, on the negative end, I don't believe that he made us extremely comfortable. And I think that the recording process could have been a bit more fun, and I think without, you know, bad-mouthing him too much, I think that was probably something that he could have improved a little bit.
I've sat through several recording sessions with some pretty powerful producers recently, and I think what's most interesting to me about the process is that you would expect the ego to be in the band, and I think the egos are in the producers.
Definitely, I think so, especially with our past couple experiences. And
and I don't mean that in a bad way, but, you know, I mean, if, let's face it, you are taking someone else's music that you did not create, and your responsibility is to give it a sound, so your ego has to be huge to a certain extent, not to overshadow the ego of the band, but because really, I mean, just to go on the nice side for a second, it probably is an immense responsibility to have, you know, five other people that you're responsible to, and to achieve what they wanted.
It's especially hard for us, too, because the five of us work every day. We write the songs together, and we produce ourselves, and everybody comes up with things, you know, over and over and over again, and we get so set on things, the five of us, and when somebody else comes in, they don't like something. It's really hard to change it.
So I'm not going to read your goodbye quote saying that this album was a goodbye, but I imagine this album really is, ready, bad pun, a hello to a whole new bunch of listeners, because it really is, you know. So discovery is always fun, and I think a lot of people are going to discover you in a whole different way through this record.
I would certainly hope so. I mean, that's always the goal when we make a record. Obviously, you know, we're trying to make people who have bought our records in the past, we're trying to still keep them on board, but there's only so much of that you can do. You got to stay true to yourself as an artist, and hopefully by doing that, hopefully new people will come on board and, you know, check out what we're doing.
Okay. I'm not going to do my usual thing I do with allmusic.com, which is read the moods and stuff, but I am going to read you a quote. Their songs display dynamic skill and attention to melodious detail that defies their youthful, upbeat, and often lyrical, optimistic personas. So how do things get so damn dark?
I think the last
your youthful, optimistic persona's gone down the friggin' tubes on this record, I just want to tell you. And we're going to go on this for a while because dark is good.
Last couple years have been, I think, actually have just been a few darker years for myself and Chad, who write most of the lyrics. And I guess I was just trying to be honest to what was inside, you know. And I don't really set out to write a certain type of record lyrically, but I just was writing about what my life was about in the past couple years before this, you know, record came out.
From Epic to your own label. Now, that's a brave move, but probably creatively satisfying despite the producer.
That was definitely satisfying. You know, with Epic, there were some good things, but one of the bad things was we were really rushed to make our record, and we were also almost forced to put a couple songs on the record that we didn't want on our record, and this album was, because there was no label involved when we were recording it, it was completely on our own. There was, you know, outside of the producer, there was nobody telling us, you know, what needed to be done to the record or what, you know, when we needed to go into the studio to make it. So that was liberating.
And I think actually what's probably a good thing is it's kind of like, you know, you go to college, you go to school, and you get certain kinds of training, and maybe the major label thing is kind of like going to school, and then you graduate, and you can get the gig you really want. And this is an opportunity to use everything that you learn, better or worse, and kind of have the freedom, but freedom based on some sort of, you know, what do you think?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Well, no, because, I mean, it's not like you went out and made an indie album. There's some real, you know, you still played by the rules. I mean, you opened with just a killer, you know, killer song. You didn't mess around and say, oh, we're going to put the good song on, you know, track 12 just to mess with people. You opened with a killer, and then it, you know, and then it flows from there. And I think that's pretty. So your bio on the site says, I love this. There are four thematic cornerstones. Four thematic cornerstones. So my job tonight is to get to the bottom of the four four thematic cornerstones. Can you rattle them off for me very fast?
Quadrology.
It's the quadrology.
Well, I guess those songs would be This Is a Love Song for the Loveless, Shotgun Serenade, This Valentine Ain't No Saint, and French Kiss Off, which are, you know, I almost think they're self-explanatory. If you read the lyrics and listen to the songs, they just kind of...
I did, but it's just kind of fun.
They just kind of really typify the urgency and the overall vibe of the lyrics of the record, I think.
And then, and again, with a four-year-old daughter, this would scare her, I'm sure, but I Love You to Death, Drive Safe, which you called a lullaby for the end of the world. Wow.
It's a...
Does he ever, like, sing this to put the band to sleep on the bus?
Every night.
Every night. Wow. And everybody has some pretty damn wicked dreams?
Well, we have...
Some, it's weird, I tell you.
We have some messed up dreams just because we're riding in this vehicle that's shaking all over the road while we're...
That vehicle's great. What do you... Now, isn't that like what you take the tour of like, Staten Island or something on?
We call it the mothership. And at night, it's called the night train.
Night train. Right, and you can drink some night train on the night train, and you, right?
Yes, you can. Yes, you certainly can.
What makes this band happy in all of this darkness?
What makes us happy is the five of us and our crew, like us, being together. We want things, sometimes things are down, but... You know, we all grew up together, and we've been friends for years and years, and that kind of goes, probably goes a long way to keeping us together more than anything else has at this point, just because we're friends. There's a few places that we've never been that we get a ton of messages from. We get a lot of messages from places in Asia, like...
Singapore, Malaysia, well, right?
Yeah, Singapore, Malaysia, places like that that we get...
I wonder how you say the Juliana theory in Singaporean.
Oh, man... Who knows?
You probably get some kind of soup that would be really spicy and you probably wouldn't, and have some seafood in it you wouldn't want to eat, I would imagine. I'd like the Juliana theory, please. Okay, where do you love playing, and I'm going to say this politely, where could you easily avoid for the rest of your born days?
Well, speaking of Salt Lake City, we love playing in Salt Lake City. It's amazing. It's, and
I heard they really rock out. I guess that, you know, there's other things missing probably, and I'm not being facetious because I've been there quite a bit.
For some reason, every time we play there, the crowd reaction is above and beyond all the rest of tour. They're crazy, which is really strange. And
we're gonna deal with Houston, Texas.
My God, that, you know, it's probably, I've been to Austin, I've been to Dallas, and I have not, but I've had to send other people to Houston for other things, and everybody comes back. You know what Houston's got? The world's largest furniture store.
Oh, really?
The thing is like 100 acres. I'm not exaggerating. Jeez. I mean, there's like a full throttle basketball court in the place. So Houston. Yeah, what is it about Houston? Too many oil slicks? What's the deal?
It's polluted and miserable. I know I hate it.
Hey, maybe that could be their slogan. Houston, polluted. But you see, it could be the drunk thing. Polluted and miserable. Maybe that could be the name of your next album.
Polluted and Miserable. I like it. That sounds like us.
It's a good title for our next record.
Okay, our producer asked me to ask this, so I'll ask it, because we didn't see the mystery of the band name anywhere on the website. And I know you're tired of it, but you know what? But my job is to tell people stuff that they might not be able to get on the website. So,
well, when the band started out, we were a side project, and we basically thought we'd play maybe one or two
You
shows.
Were in the other band, yeah.
Yeah, we were all, well, actually, we were all in other bands.
Other band, right.
And we were like, you know what, we're just gonna hurry up and come up with a name. So we came up with the name The Juliana Theory, and we made up this elaborate story about sociologists and college students in Pittsburgh creating an experiment that involved music and people's reactions to it and interactions and, you know.
I'm buying it.
And we had, you know, it was our press release and it was a full story. And for 2 years, anytime people asked, we would explain it. And it took 10 minutes every time. And after 2 years, we got tired of telling the 10-minute story. And we just said, it doesn't mean anything. And they'd be like, well, what about that whole thing with the theory you were trying to prove? And we'd be like, We just said that, you know, make something interesting.
It's basically to prove that whatever you tell people, they'll believe.
That was the theory. The Giuliani theory was to us was it was the secret thing was you can was that
you
people will believe well was that people will believe anything you tell them, and we proved it because almost everybody we told they believed that story.
Now, you see, isn't it great that I got to ask you this after all this time, because I didn't get the long, and I would not have accepted the long sociological story. I probably would have known that there was a joke in there somewhere, because unless there was a deep, dark woman named Giuliana in your past.
No, honestly, not that I know of.
Giuliana's a great name. I can imagine what she'd look like.
Possibly Chad's past. We don't know much about his past, but
And we don't. All right, here we go. Here's where the gusto comes, whatever the gusto is. The last thing we like to do, and we fill out the rest of the time with this, and it really is kind of joyful and fun, we've kind of created a little trademark that we call a musical sandwich. And it is two of your songs as the bread, and then any fillings you want in between, and I will play it precisely as you ask for it.
It's the coolest thing anybody's ever asked us to do, ever. This is amazing. Wow. I'm kind of blown away now. Well, since you like Love Song for the Loveless, I guess that should be the first one.
All right.
And then the last one could be Leave Like a Ghost.
Sonic Youth, Moat.
Okay. And there's no rule who gets more, so if you've got more in your brain, go ahead.
Pink Floyd, One of These Days.
Wow, Sonic Youth to Pink Floyd, woof.
The Beatles, And Your Bird Can Sing.
The Who, Love, Rain, or Me.
Wow, okay.
Garbage, Vow.
The Cardigans, Communication.
Metric, The Police and the Priva.
Loretta Lynn, High on a Mountaintop.
Yeah. Led Zeppelin, Achilles' Last Stand.
All right, then it's gonna have to be Johnny Cash, Big River.
My Bloody Valentine song, but isn't anything.
Okay.
Fugazi. Now what's on? Rend It.
Wow. Excellent.